ya, and it's time for the Game Sports Podcast. It is your host, David McKay Jr., bringing you another special edition upload powered by 91N, that's 91 Network, and this edition is sponsored by Flawless Roofing Sure Seal Incorporated. And before I introduce my co-host and guest, here's a quick message about Flawless Roofing that you need to hear. Special shout out to the producer of this segment, Alex Flood. You know we all appreciate you here on the game at 91N. You make these special editions perfect, or should I say you make them special? Yeah, I had to start right away with a pun. That's awful. But I'm going to go get right now, let's start off with the show like that. Absolutely. To the co-host joining yours truly here tonight on the Game Sports Podcast, he is a general sports analyst on the game, and he's an overall analyst with 91N. He's been around for well over 5 years with the game, and it's been, he would like to say a long 5 years maybe, but I think it's been a short because we've been having fun together. And I must add, he is an EA Sports NHL 24 legend already, okay? Alex Parr. Parzy, my friend, how's it going?
I don't know if you've ever done an introduction that hasn't made me cringe in like the last 15 straight shows. I don't know why you always make me want to vomit and then throw it over to me. But that last part was true. Hell yeah. I already hit Michigan's left and right in NHL. So I'm ready to buzz here. I'm ready to go.
There is one thing I got to make sure I state. You're not in the Sioux anymore, and that's very upsetting. So the LAN parties are going to be a little bit different this year. Game Sports Podcast. Now, getting to our guest for this special edition upload, he's Manitoba-born, played in the WHL, the AHL, the NHL, and the ECHL. He totaled 11 games in the NHL with the Philadelphia Flyers and the Nashville Predators, with being drafted in the ninth round by the Philadelphia Flyers in 2004, and he is a AHL Calder Cup champion in the 2012-2013 season with the Grand Rapids Griffins. This former professional hockey player had no problem dropping the gloves, okay? And if you're on the other side facing off against him, good luck. Let's bring him in now. Retired former professional hockey player and left winger, Tristan Grant. Tristan, thanks for coming on the pod here today.
I greatly appreciate it. I'm glad we could finally connect after the many months of cat and mouse. So it's good to be here.
You know, I got to take a little bit of blame for that because I did something called, I just decided to get married in that couple months and decided to go on my honeymoon. So I think, you know, I apologize. This has always been priority, though. It was a hard decision between the three.
I understand. Yeah, sometimes we get stupefied when we do that. So,
yeah. Love that. Now, before we get into our topics, we always have a post opener. But I usually have one, but I'm going to have two for this because there's somebody that couldn't join us for this upload. An episode, easy for me to say. And you know what? I got to read it off the text. Yeah, because as everyone knows, we don't follow a script. So I'm going to read it word for word from a text message from Brendan Brooks. He said, quote unquote, ask Grant about the retirement for Jeff Hogan and was a cool experience to watch a friend and teammate get his number retired. First off, poor grammar, because that's his exact terminology. He said was cool. So yes, I'm asking about Jeff Hogan's retirement. And if you thought it was a cool experience watching a friend's number get retired.
No, that was pretty cool. Yeah, it was the first time I met Brooksy. I've obviously heard his name before. And I think even at times he probably shared the ice at one point during both their careers. But yeah, it was pretty cool because Jeff Hogan and I both came in at the same time. And we're kind of at somewhat similar stages of our careers. And Jeff was always good for me. We're obviously, you know, there's Jeff, there's, me and, Brendan Evans and Nathan Page. We're like the four kind of older guys of the, you know, the leadership group of that team. So, we had a lot of respect for each other and, you know, any day of the week, we would have each other's backs. And it was really exciting. I think it was the right thing to do for Grand Rapids to retire his number. He did a lot of good things. He was a great leader and, you know, he belongs up in the rafters.
It's a cool thing to get your number up in the rafters. That's an experience in itself, right? That's doesn't matter if it's the OHL, NHL, AHL, minor hockey. It's just something, you know, you did something that had an impact on that team, on that league, whatever it may be. It's really cool.
No, so yeah. It is pretty cool. I never had a jersey retirement, but my hometown in Nipaw, Manitoba, after we won the Calder Cup, we had They put a banner up over the front entrance of our rink. It's a little bit smaller than the Shane Knighty Stanley Cup champion one, which is totally fair. But I'm up there a little bit higher and a little bit smaller than Shane Knighty. So it's a no, but it's obviously a great honor. You know, everyone that's had success in from my hometown, you know, their pictures up in the arena. And you know, I remember when I was a kid as well, you know, you see like you see players that you looked up to, and you know, obviously it brings a reality that, you know, you could do that as well. So you know, it's always a special, and you know, this kind of reminder of like your hard work and how people appreciate it as well. And you know, just a lot of respect. So it's just always great to be a part of that, whether it's your number or a great team, it's yours. It's always a cool experience.
It is. I love that part of the game where you retire. If it's at the Stanley Cup banner, if you win a championship banner, if it's a number, it's either way, it's a cool little ceremony to add to the game. It really overall is. Now, the other part I want to get to in the opener is talking about your retirement, which I think is really fitting to this topic because we're talking about number retirements. We were talking about off air how you were just coming back from hot yoga. Okay, so obviously, you know, the retirement must be going quite well. But I want to give you the floor. Instead of doing it at the end, I want to give you the floor about what you're doing now, anything you want to promote, or if you're doing any coaching, if you're just enjoying retirement, or if you're doing a podcast maybe. What's going on in Tristan's life during retirement right now?
Oh man, it's an ongoing grind. You know, I got I'm divorced. I have two daughters. I'm a general contractor. I'm trying to get fully licensed and everything, so I am busy doing multiple different projects. You know, I've done like three bathrooms so far since early July. Currently do a kitchen right now. I got a deck I got to finish, another fence I got to finish. I'm pretty busy with that kind of stuff. So I've been doing some more commercial stuff in the past, but I just hated it because it, you know, I was a foreman and it was just turning out to be an adult daycare of the people that I had to work with and everything. And it was just like, I can't do this anymore. It's just like, you know, we've all had teammates in the past, and you know, some of them are better than others, but you know, just like these type of workers, it's kind of the generation, the world that we're in right now, is it's like no one really wants to work. The level of professionalism is definitely lacking, and it's just at times it's frustrating. So I made a decision that I was just kind of better off just kind of going on my own and you know, make my living that way. And I'm really liking it because it brings a lot of creativity. I still enjoy working with my hands. So it's, you know, it's good. And I'm on my feet and I'm active. So it's, you know, some days are tougher than others for sure. But, being in charge of your own schedule and everything is pretty lucky.
I say that the big thing overall is trying to see what you can do after. There's a lot of friends of mine that did stop playing that, yeah, after they played in Europe, they came back, they were police officers or they became firemen. They became something that was around the public service line, right? You're probably the first person to tell me that after playing that they wanted to be a contractor. I'm gonna be full out honesty with you. Because that's a skill. I just learned this year how to truly put up drywall and mud. Okay, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm an office guy. I'm in human resources. Okay, so that I'm have an office job. I didn't go that route, and it's to be able to do that. I had to renovate a lot in my own house, and I've had to.
Right.
And I kind of wish I was able to do it myself. But
man, I struggled to build a bathroom.
Yeah. No, I actually tried doing insurance, probably like a year after I retired. I had a guy that contacted me. He was a big hockey fan. He was from New York City. His name was Mark Keaton. He was a big guy at the Mass Mutual, and I really tried, but the timing was just so terrible. Like I haven't taken a test since like grade 12, so I studied my ass off to get this insurance license. You know, after I failed the test like twice, I tried a third time and I passed it. And I sold a couple policies and everything, but it was like, I don't know. I'm not a good salesman. Like, it's tough. People don't want to buy policies that you know, about you dying. It's a very tough product. It's a very tough product to sell. Yeah. And with the timing as well, the pandemic started and it just kind of put an end to it. So, I had people to take care of. I still have people to take care of. You know, I got bills to pay and everything. So, it's something that I've just always been able to do. I've always had like some really good ingenuity. I've always been like a do-it-yourselfer kind of guy. So, I could turn wrenches. I could use power tools and everything. So it's been kind of like a natural fit. Drywall sucks. I do a lot. I do a shit ton of drywall and it's absolutely terrible. Like when people ask me, like they want to do like all new drywall, I'm just like, oh man, like how do we avoid this? do I like overcharge this by like 50% so they don't do it? So
my friend's card, give him a call. He's going to drywall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I know I were kind of rambling around and everything, but that's kind of how it is. Yeah. Like I didn't know what I was going to do. I was in a huge panic when I retired and, I was luckily, you know, my work ethic hasn't changed. You know, growing up as a kid, I come from blue collar family and everything as well. So those are like roots are very deep in me and, getting up and going to work every day is still not an issue. So, but that's why I'm doing the yoga. So it makes it just a tiny bit easier to get out of bed in the morning.
Yoga, I tried it once. Like I told you, it did not go that good for me.
Yeah.
Carl, I've had the mic for a little bit. I'll pass it to you. People don't want to always hear me. They're here to hear you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to follow up with that yoga question in a little bit. But yeah, you're speaking about working with your hands. The reason why you're on the show is because you're using the punching a lot of guys' teeth. You're talking guys like a couple guys that came on the show, actually, Nasty John Morasty and Luke Gazdick. What about some other guys you fought? Mike Brown, Milan Lucic. You fought some real heavyweights. When you look back at your career, which are some of the fights that are most memorable to you?
Yeah, there's a lot of tough cats for sure. A lot of guys like out of my league, probably. And it showed it.
You did good. I watched you. I'm not gonna lie. On lunch today, I was having I'm not gonna lie. I had a potato salad.
Nice.
Some pounds, and I had a yogurt and a fruit. Okay.
Nice.
Last time you ever hear me say this on the show, but I watched, especially with Nasty Morasty. Okay, and obviously, as Alex said, we've had John on the show. We've had Gazdick on the show. I've talked to Browner. We haven't had the chance to have Mike Brown on yet, but you know, we've had some heavyweights on the show. The other one's Trevor Gillies. We've had some heavyweights on the show. And let me say my favorite fight that you had was definitely either the Lucic one, but probably Morasty's. I loved that fight that you had against Morasty. That was a fucking tilt. It was great.
I actually watched that. I get these people that randomly send fight videos all the time. Especially people, the new people I meet, you know, they find out, you know, what my background was. He's like, and they're like, they're kind of like intrigued. They're like, what's this? He's like, I don't know. Like, you can search my name and you'll find, you know, there's a couple goals on there as well. Like, I scored some goals too. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I remember, you know what? I was thinking about that because, you know, John tagged me on Facebook not too long ago. But I think it was about that fight, preseason fight. And actually, the story about that fight.
Yeah.
Barry Trost before the game is like, yeah, they're playing this Morasty kid. Like, I was like, yeah. And, you know, like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, I know who he is. Like, I know exactly who he is. Like, it's like, I fought him in juniors as well, in the Western League as well, when he was in Tri-Cities. But Barry's like, don't, whatever you do, don't fight this guy. And I'm just like, what else am I going to do in this preseason game to show I'm trying to make this team? I just kind of got like handcuffed to like, it was kind of ridiculous. Like, I was just like, okay, like what am I supposed to do here? Like, I didn't care. Like, I was going to go fight him, obviously. Like, I didn't care what Barry says. Like, sure enough. And like, it was a great spirited fight. You know, it was a good fight. John was a really, he's a tough guy for his stature. And he's one of those guys that you just kind of keep punching him. And he's tough. He's a tough kid. So
Yeah, and he's kind of showing his little mohawk nowadays. Not his little mohawk. I mean, he's showing his flow and his everything on Shorzy, right? A friend of the show as well, Terry Ryan. That show.
Oh, yeah.
I love seeing that on there. It's really
cool. No, it is. It is a great show. I kind of promote it because a lot of new clients I meet, they catch my Canadian accent quite quickly, and you know, so they ask like, oh, what are you doing down here? And, they always ask, are you from the UP? Is like, no, I'm from more north of the UP. So then I kind of get in the story. It's like, why I'm down here, and you know, it's just like, oh, I play professional hockey and. Da da da, you know, kind of goes on and on. So, and we always talk about the always like, oh, have you seen Letter Kenny? I was just like, yeah, you know, like that's, yeah. You know, probably every person, every small town can say like they have a group of friends that are identical to that. So that's how it is in Canada.
You know what? The big thing is when it comes to being in the role of an enforcer, and like I said, we've had the opportunity to talk to a good number of them on the show. I would say probably about six or seven of them were those enforcers. I mentioned them to you, including yourself. And I never asked none of them this question. I don't know why, because I think it's such a good question. Toot my own horn. But what was your approach to a fight? What's going through your mind? Like, what was your approach? Did it matter about who you were fighting? Or did you not even think about who you were fighting? Did you have the same approach? You're like, all right, a stance, a particular stance, or you wanted to have one foot in a certain spot. Like, look, when I played junior hockey, and yeah, I brought it up. I did par. I brought it up. When I played, I had some fight, but I wasn't a fighter. I wasn't him, but I liked to model my game after him. Was Tyler Kennedy when I played. Two-way guy that wanted to skate hard and try to, you know, wasn't good on the PK, though. I was awful. I was way too offensively minded. But when I had a couple fights, and when it was me fighting, it was just like, all right, I just got to protect myself and just go. You know, I had one lineup fight and I got beat. I got punched pretty good in the face. So that's why my intention was I ain't lining up. I'm grabbing and fighting. I'm just going to grab and go, because if I line up, I'm going to look like a fool. So what was your thought process when you're lining up for that fight? What approach did you take?
I don't know. Like I'll be completely honest with you. It caused a lot of stress and anxiety for many, many years. I remember even in junior hockey, you're young and like, you don't really know any better and you're just full. You're so full of piss and vinegar that it doesn't really, I don't know. You don't even realize like what kind of position you're putting yourself into. I was honestly, my mentality of going to it was just like, I didn't really care if I broke a nose or I got a tooth knocked out or even get knocked out. My biggest fear going into fight was losing the fight and letting my teammates down. That was the absolute like kill shot. If that ever happened, and I was a good enough fighter that I could protect myself. I didn't take too many beatings, throughout my entire career. So I was a pretty skilled fighter that way. But like the anxiety of like the possibility that I was going to lose a fight was like, it was like a sickening feeling. And then the moment that I knew that I either clearly won the fight or it was just a great spirited fight, or I just kind of survived. Then I get to go to the penalty box or the dress room was like just a sigh of relief for me for so many years. So, obviously with like the websites they had, like, you know, they've had those, you know, websites for, yeah. You know, you had to do your homework. You always had to do your homework. So you learn and you fight guys. Like I remember when I first turned pro, like in Philadelphia, like that whole division of like Hershey, Wilkes-Barre, Norfolk, like it was like a slugfest, like every week going out, and every team had like four or five like guys that would chuck them. So, you know, you would have to learn quick, like what are these guys' tendencies and you know, what are their strengths and what are their flaws, and you know, there's a whole different sideshow and game plan to that. And it took a lot of energy, for sure. It took a lot of energy, because if you didn't take care of yourself and prepare for yourself. You're gonna get hurt. So,
especially when you're going against someone who knows what they're doing, fighting, like, or someone who's a scrapper, right? That's if you, yeah exactly. Par, I'll let you go again. You know, I took over a few of that again. I'll let you go the next one.
What about making your NHL debut? Do you want to take us through the day you got the call and everything that was going on from the moment, you know, you found out to the moment you were on the plane getting ready to lace them up and go?
No, in Philadelphia, there was no plane. The Phantoms and the Flyers were in the exact same
tracks
facility. The rinks are the same thing. So I don't know. Like, I think it was like maybe the second week of the NHL season, Paul Holmgren came down and he kind of told me, I was just like, you're going to play this Friday, whatever it is. And I was just like, all right, here we go. You know, it was pretty, you know, so they just kind of grabbed my hockey bag and pack it up and they walked through the double doors and like, oh, hey, I'm here. So like, I was already like in my underwear and everything. And that's how it was in the Philadelphia Flyers system for, I don't know, for a lot of years. I know before it was like that before I got there, and I know it was there for a few more years after I left as well. So that was kind of a interesting like transaction that they had. It was, you know, I guess it worked. You know, everyone lived in the same area, so no one really had to spend any time in hotels, and there wasn't any travel time. You know, no real emergencies to, like, you know. There was other places that I played that, like, guys were in warm-ups and then they had to get undressed because they had to go to the airport because they got called up and they had to fly away or something like that. So that obviously still happens with every other team, but, you know, it was pretty exciting. I had a really good summer prior to that. I trained extremely hard. My roommate at the time was Riley Cote and we were doing a lot of like clean living and just kind of working our asses off and just kind of punching the clock every day. And, luckily paid off. So I ended up playing my first NHL game against, Atlanta. And that's where Shane Knighty was playing at the time as well. So no. Like two new Nipah kids are playing like together in the very first, my very first NHL game. And my parents flew down and my uncle came down as well. And, it was a pretty neat experience. So.
I bet. See, that's, you can always have that banner story about them too. You can always.
Yeah, exactly.
But one thing that I noticed in the NHL, obviously, to be straight, you score goals in the A and the W, you score goals. Obviously, you didn't get one to show, but you did get some helpers. Do you remember your.
Jeff Sanderson stole my goal.
Okay.
No,
I want to know about that.
I remember this. I remember this because I remember the sequence very well. I remember I got some shit pass in my feet and I kicked it up, you know, just like behind my leg. I kick it up to my thing. I dangle this guy at the blue line. I dish it off to defenseman. I continue to drive the net and I get this big fat rebound. I think it was Jaguar was the goalie in Anaheim. And then I cradled it and I backhand it. I elevated it. It hit the crossbar. And it came right down on the goal line and it was starting to go in and Jeff Sanderson just kind of like, just kind of stood right there. I'm pretty confident it was on his way in. So, but yeah, that was my goal. But, yeah,
I didn't touch it. He should have said
I know. It was good. I was excited. I didn't really care at the time. You know, like looking back now, I was like, oh, I wish that zero was on the other side now. But yeah, you do. Dave,
no yeah. Fucking Jeff Sanderson on this show. Fuck that
yeah,
guy.
No.
If we do get him on, Tristan's coming back on to call him out.
Yeah.
I could have had that.
We're gonna get a video official and a lawyer in. On the other
I
cameras.
Know, right? Yeah, exactly.
So obviously you played in the show. So obviously we did talk about how you got drafted. I want to know your draft story. You know, obviously everyone has a different draft story. We've had people tell us about meetings with GMs, where they were, how it was. Obviously, it varies per round where you go, how your experience is. Sure. But it doesn't matter what round you go. Zetterberg went last in the draft. Look at his mm-hmm. career, right? But what is your draft story? Where were you? How did it happen? How excited were you? What was going on?
What year did I get drafted? In 2004. So I was 20 years old at that time. So I was going into my last year junior hockey, I believe. Was I? No. I forget now.
By your stat line, it seems that way, but that's I could be wrong. I think
no, because I would have been 21 into my last couple months of junior hockey. So yeah, I my parents used to own this rental company. We had like all the giant tents for weddings and parties and stuff like that, the big canvas tents and everything. So that's what I would do during the summertime. I would go and pound steaks all summer and like in the blistering heat, the Manitoba summers. Yeah. And it was a lot of hard work. I think my agent texted me the night before. And he's just like, "Hey, you might get drafted tomorrow." I was like, "All right, okay." You know, like at this point, I had a tryout with the Vancouver Canucks the summer before as a free agent. I'll tell a little story about that. You know, because I was playing junior hockey in Vancouver, so I played for the Vancouver Giants. So they give me kind of this courtesy like tryout. So 40 kids go to this rookie camp, 20 make main camp. So as an undrafted guy, I make the top 20 and I go to main camp with all the big dogs like Naslin, the Sedin, you know, Bertuzzi, Brad May was there, like some big dogs. And I was 18 years old and I was just like, cool, okay, like. This is kind of a big deal. So I end up playing the inter squad game, and I played on the line with the Sedin twins in the inter squad game.
No.
Yes, I did.
How did that go? What was the game like? Do you remember?
I think I ringed one off the post like my first shift of the game. Like I don't know which Sedin twin it was. Like, but he gave me this great pass and I rimmed it right off the post. Anyways, like knowing that I was going back to junior, I was trying to get a contract. You know, Mark Crawford was the coach at the time. He really liked me and Brian Burke was the GM at the time, so.
Oh, truculence himself.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of hand out my, I forget what my agent was at the time, but, I get my he gets my agent my information and everything, and a couple weeks go by, and Ron DeLorme was a guy that he lived in Vancouver as well, so he was a scout for Vancouver Canucks, and he was always at our games, so he talked to me. He's like, "Hey, Brian wants to do a deal, but him and such, they're button heads with your agent, so he's not going to do a deal with him." I'm just like, oh, great. You know, like, it was just like.
You almost want to represent yourself.
That yeah.
Fire him. Yeah. Fire him. Fuck him. He's gone.
Yeah, well, exactly.
At 18, like, what was your agent looking for that they weren't giving you? I mean, you probably would have just been happy to sign your name on the dotted line.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, like. You know, I don't know Brian personally. Like, I think Brian's a pretty, like, I don't know. I think Brian's a pretty, like, sturdy guy.
Yeah.
And he probably doesn't take any shit from anyone. So, you know, something could have been missaid, but I really don't know the story.
It was probably the private jet that your agent was fighting for.
Maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wish I signed them because that would have been – that was before, like, the first – CBA negotiations.
Yeah,
that definitely limited. That was like the last year of like the signing bonuses and everything. Because I remember like a lot of guys who I was playing junior hockey with. You know, they're getting tryouts. They're getting contracts for like $300,000-$400,000. Like they used to just hand out money back then because there was no cap or anything like that.
Being a fan of original 16, that's like Par and IR, when there was no salary cap, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Spend all the money. But now it's not like that anymore.
But, you know, so I remember the day I got drafted. I don't know. It was early when I got the call. I had like, I had this like diesel truck loaded up to the gills that weighed 20,000 pounds because I was going to go set up tents all day. And my agent called me and, hey, congratulations, you got drafted by Philadelphia. And I was just like, all right, I'm super excited. And then I think I worked a 16-hour day that day.
No.
In the blistering sun. I'm not shitting you. That wasn't like the only day I did that, but that's just kind of how it rolled. Like, my parents had a business and I was the oldest child. And, you know, that was part of my job and that's just what I did. There was no like, I don't know. There was no, my parents did throw a party for me and everything. It was great, but, it was just kind of like the first step. And I was super excited, but at that time I still didn't have a contract. So there's still a lot of uncertainty of what was going to happen. And, yeah, I don't know. It worked out. It worked out for sure. You know, because I don't know that a lot of guys were probably like, hey, I just got drafted today. Now I'm going to go burn 15,000 calories all day and like yell at kids all day and tell them what to do and like deal with stressed out brides and grooms because they're worried with their tents going to be set up in time for their wedding. So like that's what was kind of happening. So that's kind of my story.
No, that's still, I like the part where you said that you work 16 hours on your draft day. I might have to call that the title of the show.
Yeah.
16 hours on his draft day. You know what I would have been doing on the draft day that would have been happening? I would have been bad thing to say, but probably booze in my face off and celebrate.
Oh, yeah. Like, I eventually did that for sure multiple times. Like, no, I'm not going to deny it. I was living a clean life. Like,
but. Two more topics that we want to get to, and I'm going to get to that part or go to this one. Obviously, you won a championship when you're playing the American Hockey League, very big part. And then I'm curious to know before we let you go about a certain hot topic in hockey now that seems to be dividing the hockey community in a different way because of the differences of opinion. I think more so it's on the pro side, but that's just the teaser part of what I'm going to ask you. Part we have to ask him about is championship victory with the Grand Rapids Griffins winning a title, winning everything that year.
Yeah, when you guys went into the first game of the regular season, was there that feeling in the locker room that like, hey, this is a special group, you know what, maybe we can do some damage this year? Or is that not something you'll want to get into your head?
No, absolutely not. That's not really what we're thinking, because that was a lockout year. There was still a lockout at that time, so there was a lot of talent in that league at that time. So there was like an overabundance of talent in the minors. There's a lot of guys that had to spend time in the ECHL that they probably would have been otherwise been in the American League. I think, you know, it was my first year in Grand Rapids. I was familiar with the Grand Rapids because I was obviously in Milwaukee for a couple years, and I was familiar with, you know, the rink that they had. It was a great place to play fan wise. I didn't know anything much about, you know, the organization, except I was a huge Red Wings fan, like in the mid 90s and everything. Like, I was a huge, like, I jumped on that bandwagon. I was a defenseman before I played juniors, and I was number 16 because I was like constantly half. I was like, I was trying to like mimic his game to a T. I was like running guys. I was kind of like, that's who I wanted to be. Yeah. So, you know, to be part of that organization was, I had the opportunity then, and I was just like, all right, let's go with it. And, you know, at the same time, Jeff Blaschel, it was his first year as a coach there as well. And
Sioux, Michigan native. He's across the border from us. We're Sioux, Ontario. He's from Sioux, Michigan.
Yeah, exactly. So,
back, listeners. Yeah, sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
Nope, no worries. So, I knew we had some good guys. We had some young talent to come in too. You know, Peter Mrazek came in that year. Luke Glendening started the season in the ECHL that year. So did Peter Mrazek. Yeah. And, you know, that year Glenn played in the ECHL, then came up to the American League, then played in the NHL. Like, that's, he played in all three-year leagues that year, which is pretty amazing. But, I think we started the season like 2-5, like, it was just like, oh man, like thinking like, oh man, like, am I going to be, I'm going to be home again, like May 1st, you know, like, and I wasn't really looking forward to that because I was in Oklahoma City the year before and we lost in the conference finals. So I was kind of like amped to kind of do it again and everything. So, it just turned out we had just a, it's probably the greatest group of guys and players that we had. We obviously had cliques. We had like the Czech Mafia over here. We had like the older veteran guys over here. And then we had like these young idiots here and there and everything. But we just like, everybody kind of understood their job and we just had, you know, it's pretty crazy looking back at it now. I was just like, how many fortunate bounces you need and how many things need to go your way. But we had, we went through a lot of good teams as well. But yeah, that's definitely a special moment in my career. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. And I'm happy that I'm always, I'll be always, you know, kind of connected to that group of guys. Cause it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of winning, a lot of partying. it was a good time. It was a really great time. I think we played 100 games in total that year.
Jeez.
And you had Nyquist, you had Tatar, Brandon Smith, those some other guys. And I was like, Nyquist obviously is with Nashville still. Tatar,
yeah.
Colorado. You know, Glenn Denning's still with Tampa. Hopefully they blitz that. Obviously, Mrazek is in Chicago. I'm not going to lie. When Mrazek was in Toronto, I did chirp him a lot. I'm going to say,
yeah.
Teammate of yours. He struggled a lot in Toronto.
Yeah.
But he's obviously playing in the NHL, so not really much to chirp him about, I guess. But there's obviously that team looks special. And every time I think of Grand Rapids, you think of Detroit because it is their farm system.
Yeah.
But when you think of Detroit, you think their farm system has always been great. They've not, like, they've had stars, Yzerman, they've had stars, but they always found guys like the Darren Helms, about these guys that would come up, be your third line winger, center, fill in on the second line when Yzerman or Shanny got hurt or something, mm-hmm. and still be good. Detroit was so annoying in the 90s and so annoying in the 2000s because it didn't matter. Either good their roster looked, they had the right guys, and they had the depth pieces. And what helped that depth was the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
Grand Rapids was always successful. Like you said, you maybe didn't have that energy at the beginning of the year. But look, if you name the roster off to me, I'd be like, holy shit. that's a very good team.
That's
a very good team, right? So, but you had the experience of lifting a trophy over your head. All your hard work must have said to yourself when you lifted that up, yeah, it wasn't the Stanley Cup, I get it. But you're still lifting a right below the NHL, right? Like, it's
right.
This very hard trophy to win. You must have been thinking about a lot when you lifted that over your head when you won it.
No, for sure. Yeah, you know, because, well, that was in 2013, so I was 29 years old. So, you know, if you go back to, like, to age 16. So that's a lot of years. That's a lot of years of playing at a pretty high level, that it takes to finally be like the last man standing is a pretty hard thing. So it's not the Stanley Cup. It's a great accomplishment. There is kind of like, It is kind of cooler that it was kind of a lockout year. So it is like the caliber was definitely higher as well. You know, it's just kind of like the one where the Phantoms won. And was that 2004 that the Phantoms won? Yeah. How many, like, if you go look at those rosters, like how many like Hall of Famers are like in the Calder Cup playoffs in that year of 2004? It's actually pretty amazing. So, you know, no, like I said, it was a pretty cool accomplishment. There's some great stories from that. And it was just, yeah, it was a pretty amazing ride to say the least. So
I bet now you got a ring out of it. You got a trophy out of it. You got memories out of it. And the partying, I can just imagine how the party scene was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now the last topic we'll get to, this is the sad part of the show. We're going to get to our wrap up portion of it. 39 minutes already. Time flies when you're having fun, Tristan. It's been great. I want to ask you, I want your hot take and because I know this could be a topic of 20 minutes. We'll keep it short and brief. I want to know your take on the game today in terms of fighting. We know that fighting is in Quebec, you know, in the NHL, it's still there. Okay. It's still around in some leagues, but it seems like fighting is starting to get on the way out, which I think is really unfortunate because I think it's a big part of the game. Yes, I'm a 90s birth year, so I think that's why I'm saying it. Maybe the 2010 birth years won't say the same thing because they're not used to it. But when I see kids that aren't hitting now until the under 15 age, that's so dangerous because you don't learn how to hit at a young age. You don't learn how to fight at a young age. You don't learn. It's not as safe as people think it is. And eventually fighting may be taken out of the game, and I think that's unfortunate. That's my take. I want to know your take about the way fighting is trending, the direction it's trending on going.
Well, I will admit this. I'm glad there's not really any guys anymore that have like 20, 30 fights a year. I've had a lot of seasons like that. Some of my best seasons were when I had 10, 12. You know, I think that's a really good, healthy number to have. I don't like how they're trying to push it out because, you know, forget about even the culture of the game, but I think accountability is a big thing that needs to be, I don't know, probably continued or just amped up. And there's just no accountability when you take things like that, because we all know what happens when there's no accountability. People take your liberties on you, yeah, with it, knowing that there isn't going to be, you know, a punishment, you know, whether that's a suspension or, yeah, someone might, no one's going to grab you and embarrass you in front of 10,000 people. So, I think, I don't know. It's, When have you been in a rink where there's been a fight and not everybody's been standing in the arena?
Yeah.
Has that ever existed? Has there been, I know there's probably been people like sitting around like, oh, I don't like fights, you know, like, yeah, that's fine. It's fine. But let's not forget what is on the line at the end of the year. Like, who hoists the Stanley Cup? Like, yeah, everybody should be willing to put a fist through someone's face to hoist a Stanley Cup. But I think that's what people tend to forget is like, there's not only, you know, a legendary status of, yeah, of winning a championship, but there's a lot of money on the line, yeah, and you need to be a winner. You need to be a proven winner to do that. And fighting is a huge part of that formula. Yeah. You know, like every year the Stanley Cup winning team is a gritty team. They may not have like a guy that's fights 35 times, like that doesn't exist anymore. But it's these teams that win the Stanley Cup or the last team line are all surrounded and built off team toughness. Yep. So then if you're gonna go and completely like eliminate that, you know, what are you trying to create here? So that's just kind of like the biggest thing here. It's just like, no one really, you know, no one should ever be forced to like fight, but everyone should be able to have the opportunity to prove that how badly that they want to win. And sometimes grabbing someone and sticking up for a teammate or sending a message or getting your team jacked up, you know, after being down a couple goals, that's kind of what it takes to win.
Yep. And that helps you and that shifts momentum. And we've seen it so much in the world of hockey, and the Ty Domier, you think of all that, you know, you've had some fights of your own in the day. We talked about Gazdik, we talked about Nasty Morasti, Milan Lucic, who still plays. Those are guys that are pivotal on a team success, setting the tone, and especially on the home ice side, to get the crowd into it. Especially the fan base in Toronto can be so quiet sometimes.
Right.
So it's good to have someone like Ryan Reeves as an example on that team, because it helps change and protect the, let's say, the softer players.
Yeah, I admit it. Like, I did a lot too in juniors, even in pro hockey. Like, right off, you know, as soon as the puck dropped, you score off. Like, it was kind of just like, it's kind of what you did sometimes. But those were never my greatest fights I was even proud of. I was just like, the best fights is like after you ran someone over or you're sticking up for a guy. And when you're in actual, the heat of the battle, and you get so wound up that you have to grab someone or someone needs to grab you. And there's like so much, there's just nothing really beats just like a passionate, high energy, spirited fight like that. You know, it's I'm glad like there's not many fights where you're off the, right off the face off. The guys are kind of doing like, you know, spinning the helmet and everything and, you know, doing the whole kind of show. I was never really a fan of that. But they're I think they're just crazy. I think our sport's going to be in trouble if they eliminate these like spirited and these high energy, you know, levels of competition. That's really what it is. So,
yeah, I agree. Par, do you have any final thoughts before we?
No, I think that's a great note to end on.
You like that?
I do. I think that's a heavy message to let the viewers think and marinate in their brain.
So what should the viewers do if they agree or disagree, Par? What do you think?
Fight Kristen about it if they disagree. I mean, what else can you do?
You know, I was thinking maybe they comment below or hit like, follow.
Oh, yeah, that's probably a little bit easier. I think I'd probably rather do that myself, too.
That's a good point. Tristan, this has been a pleasure. It was great getting connected with you. Finally, I know it took some time, basically patience on my end. So I appreciate that as I had some life events to attend to.
All good. First.
And again, I think we'll have to have you on some at some point again in the future, even if it's one of our new shows, even with Brooksy, because I know Brooksy was looking to try to come on to talk a bit more with Jeff Hogan and talk a bit more stuff with you there. But we appreciate
absolutely
the talk, fighting, your time in the NHL, winning the Calder Cup. You had such a great career. Right, you had a great time. Now you're contracting. You're doing hot yoga. That's what some would call living.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. You
know, thank you for coming on the show. And Par, I'll let you say what you'd like to say.
No, I think that sums it up, Tristan. That was awesome, man. Thank you for coming on and sharing so much. And hey, maybe let's do it again soon.
Absolutely, anytime, boys.
Awesome. Again, that's been Tristan Grant here on the Game Sports Podcast, and that's been Alex Par. Alex, thank you,
of course,
for taking the time. Even though you're not in the Sioux anymore, you're all the way in Ottawa now. At least I get to see you through a camera lens.
That's why I never brought up anything about the Leafs, and I've learned very quickly that I can't do that here.
Yeah, you can't do
that. No, I can't. I can't. You should see the looks, man. It's crazy.
Love it. They're just bitter because of all the series they won in the early thousands.
Imagine being so mad at a team and like thinking, oh, they're so bad. But that was like one of the last teams we eliminated from the playoffs, so. Whatever. I digress.
That's fun. Listeners, if you had a fun time and you want to take part of the show, comment below. You can comment at Tristan. You can comment at one of us. And if you do chirp Tristan, guess what? I'll give him your at. No, I'm just kidding. I'll just let him know and you can comment below. Again, this has been the Game Sports Podcast Special Edition Upload with Tristan Grant, Alex Par, yours truly, David McKeag. Make sure you hit like, follow, and subscribe. If you have been listening on YouTube, subscribe to the 91N Network YouTube channel. Or if you're on Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, all over the place, that's that like, that subscribe, that follow, whatever it is, goes a long way for us. So we appreciate that from you if you could take the time to do that. I'm here to remind you to keep your stick on the ice, swing your bats, catch your touchdowns, drain your threes, and shoot your shots. Booyah.